I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, Texas public schools could be heading towards a major change in what kids are required to read, including passages from the Bible. A draft proposal tied to a new statewide required reading list would embed selections of the Old and New Testaments across grade levels, from early elementary stories to passages like the Beatitudes in middle schools and excerpts in high school literature. Supporters argue the Bible is foundational to understanding history, language, and classic literature. Critics say this crosses a constitutional line, elevates one religion over others, and risks turning English class into Bible studies and a culture war battleground. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up with The Source. But first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
It's one thing to love public radio. It's something special to support it. That car you don't need anymore, it could be worth hundreds in support. Go to tpr.careasy.org to learn more.
Live from the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The Republican leadership in Texas is pushing efforts to put explicitly Christian material in Texas public schools. This includes a state law that now requires the posting of the Ten Commandments in every classroom. And now there is a new push that would require public Bible passages for students as part of the core curriculum. Supporters argue that this is about tradition, literacy, and the Bible's influence on Western literature and history. But critics say this is something else entirely. They say this is the government using public schools to promote a particular faith, indoctrination, and they say it violates the Constitution. Do you support parts of the King James Bible being used in Texas public schools? Would you rather parents or their chosen faith leaders teach their children about the Bible? You can call in. We want to hear from you. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And with us today to help us understand what is going on here, we're joined by Andrew Seidel. He is the Vice President of Strategic Communication at Americans United for Separation of Church and State. And Andrew, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be with you all.
So tell me, what is this proposal? What's all in there?
Well, there's quite a bit in there. And like the new Blue Bonnet curriculum and like the law requiring the Ten Commandments to be displayed in every classroom, adding Bible stories to the literary canon that students are forced to read, required to read, it's part of a Christian nationalist effort to impose their narrow set of religious beliefs on other people's kids, on public school students. And this is happening in Texas, but it's also happening kind of all around the country. And in this country, in America, you know, we invented the separation of church and state. And that's partly so that families, not politicians, not public school officials, get to decide whether and how their children should engage with religion. I mean, put simply, David, it's public schools are not Sunday schools. And this would be, in our estimation, the first time that any state in the country has mandated that all public school students would be reading religious texts. And as you mentioned, you know, it's one particular translation of one particular religious text that they will be reading.
Right. Are they going to be using the Trump Bible, you know, with the Lee Greenwood, God Bless the USA in there?
As far as I know, no, but that was something that happened or almost happened in Oklahoma. Americans United for Separation of Church and State also stepped in that instance. So, you know, it would not be surprising. And we would certainly urge the Texas Board of Education not to approve this reading list, so long as it is including these reading texts. And we would encourage public school families and teachers to speak out against it. There is still time. My understanding is that there is a meeting on this tomorrow. So raise your voices up and speak out against this imposition of religion using the machinery of the state.
Well, I hear from Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, he is very outspoken in keeping a religious doctrine being taught in schools. when it comes to Sharia law. You know, they're very outspoken about, we don't want Muslim faith, we don't want to support that, we don't like that. But when it comes to Christian faith, it's a different story. So is that hypocrisy?
I believe it is. And let's be clear about why they're doing this too, because this is not about literacy. It's not even about cultural literacy. It's about theocracy. It is about using the machinery of the state to evangelize other people's children, children who are required by law to be in those public schools. And you know, you don't take my word for it. Brandon Hall, who is a member of the State Board of Education, posted on social media that this proposal, quote, would bring the word of God back into schools in a meaningful way for the first time in decades. We need prayer warriors to intercede for this. Right? So they're not hiding what they are trying to do. And your point about bringing other religions into the public school, having children read, you know, some of the texts from other religions, it not only shows the hypocrisy, but it helps illustrate the real problems with this. Because as soon as it's not their religion that's being imposed on kids, they don't want it. And that is why we have that separation of church and state in this country. And look, for my money, if you're gonna have kids read, you know, some of these important documents, let's have them learn about the separation of church and state and how this founding principle is woven into the fabric of our Constitution and government and protects the freedom of every American to believe and worship as they choose, so long as they're not harming others. Let's read some of the founders' brilliant writings on that.
Let's go to a caller. We have she, you're on the air.
It's Flea, just like the bug.
Okay.
But I was calling because, yes, I am a Christian and a strong believer. However, I also was in the military, and I swore to protect the Constitution. And this is plainly unconstitutional, with us supposed to have separation of church and state. And I think the people who are trying to force this law would be completely up in arms if students were required to read from the Quran, from the Bhagavad Gita, from the Torah, any other thing. And so I think it's complete hypocrisy, unconstitutional, and it's forcing our beliefs on someone else, which is completely un-American and un-Texan as far as I'm concerned.
All right, Flea, thank you for your call. I think they would be up in arms if they had to read a different translation of the Bible as well. So that's also an issue. And so your reaction to that call, Andrew?
I mean, Flea is just right on. I mean, Texas is one of the largest and most diverse states in the nation. And studies tell us, we know this. This is nothing new. We know that children learn best when they see themselves represented in the classrooms. And there's just no shortage of reading materials that can reflect that diversity and can speak to all students, not just this narrow group that the Christian nationalists want to lift up above everybody else. And, you know, David, your point about which interpretation we're using is a very important point. Flea illustrated it well by talking about those other religious texts, but the state is making a theological choice here. The state is preferring one religion over others, and that is by definition coercive. It's divisive, and it tramples the religious freedom of everyone. And let me just give you a concrete example from American history, a forgotten era. There's something in called the Philadelphia Bible Riots that I would like Texans to just lodge in your brain for a minute, because when we first started creating public schools in this country, that Protestant cultural hegemony that was alive and well. And this is, go back to 1844, just a few years after Philadelphia creates its public school system. And there are schools that are using the Bible to teach kids to read, which is, I mean, this is basically the same thing that Texas wants to do, okay? And this led to really thorny questions that had bred religious violence throughout human history. Which version of the Bible is the real Bible? Which one are we going to have kids read in the schools that they are required to attend. Mm-hmm. And the clash here came down to, are we going to do the Catholic version of the Bible or the Protestant version
of the Bible? So that's a really thorny question. It brings up a lot of nuance to the debate here. We got to take a break. We're going to come back, talk more about Texas possibly mandating school children in public schools read the Bible. That's on The Source. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a proposal that is before the Texas State Board of Education that would require that school children from K through 12 read parts of the Bible as part of their curriculum. It would be part of the Texas testing system. This is something that they want all Texas public school children to be very well versed in. But does this violate the Constitution? Already we have a state law that requires the posting of the Ten Commandments in every Texas public school classroom. That has gone to the courts twice and here in Texas, and it was struck down as unconstitutional, but they couldn't make it a statewide ruling because of a Supreme Court decision. So what is happening with this? Andrew Sidell is with us. He's with the Americans United for Separation of Church and State. So explain what's going on with the Ten Commandments.
I would love to do that. Can I just put a bow on the Philadelphia Bible riots real quick? Because the city erupted in flames. I mean, there was a huge clash. Churches were set on fire. People were killed. And it's an example of what happens when that wall of separation between church and state breaks down. The violence and divisiveness that wall of separation holds at bay break through. And those, I mean, I know that question, Protestant Bible or Catholic Bible, may seem distant today, but when the state's forcing an interpretation on kids in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, it does make a pretty big difference.
Okay. I'm going to go to a caller right now because I don't want to waste their time. So Renee, I want to get you on the air. Go ahead, Renee.
Hi, I used to be a public school teacher. I taught at Southwest Independent School District and also in SAISD. And I used to actually bring in passages of the Bible during class. And there were passages like about, when we were talking about slavery, and students would ask, well, how can they justify this? And I would bring in the passage, and if they had other notions like what angels looked like, we would look in the Bible and I would show them, what the actual description of them. They were horrified, and it was always in the spirit of finding what the truth was, and that's exactly what I'm hoping that the legislator is going to do. I love teaching with the Bible because it shows exactly what it says, and the students have a discussion like that passage about slavery, it would make students angry. I remember distinctly one of my smartest students, when I brought it up, when they were talking about slavery and how wrong it was, and I said, well, in the Bible, it says, slaves obey your masters. And some of them wouldn't believe me, and I would copy out the passage and pass it out, and then we would have a discussion. My smartest student, I remember, made the comment, that is so stupid. And so it's like, it caused a great discussion, which is the point of me bringing it into class. Now,
well, let me ask you real quickly. Let me ask you something. The Bible said that angels were horrifying to look at. I mean, I thought they all looked like Michael Landon.
Well, have you ever? No, they don't look. They look like monsters. Look it up. They look like monsters. They're horrible. They are horrifying. You can even look it up online. Type in something like, what do angels actually look like according to the Bible? And then you can find the Bible passage. I don't remember what it's been so many years now.
Okay.
But yeah, they don't look anything like what you think they do. They're horrifying.
Okay.
But, all of this is great. But my question is the legislature, because I missed the beginning of your discussion, so you might have already discussed this, so I apologize in advance. But is the legislature going to tell teachers what to teach, or are they just going to have got to cover these passages? Does anybody know yet?
We'll take a look. Renee, thanks for the great call, and we appreciate that. So let's get to this question, and we'll go back to the Ten Commandments. So, sure. Andrew Seidel, do you know if they're going to – is it just going to be the football coach coming in there and reading the Bible, or how's it going to work?
I mean, there are proposed required readings that include Bible stories. And I missed which grade Renee said he taught. But we're talking down kindergarten, first grade, like third graders are going to be learning about the conversion on the road to Damascus. We're talking about very young children as well who are required to read these things, right? This is not supplemental material that could be added on to, you know, a history lesson. Now, we are also talking about eighth and ninth grade and high schoolers and things like that, but I mean, we're getting to really young kids as well. And the Bible can be taught in public schools. You can use it to educate, not to indoctrinate. You can use it to teach, not to preach. You can't teach it as though it is truth. And when you just have kids reading stories without some of that context, you do kind of veer into that. And historically, we have seen, there have been a number of studies, including studies that have done this on some of the voluntary sort of elected Bible classes that have popped up around the country, including in Texas, that whenever public schools try to teach about the Bible, they often end up preaching instead of teaching, and it can veer into real problematic territory.
All right. So let me go to another caller with Jennifer. And Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi. I actually taught Sunday school for 13 years, some grade 1, grade 3, and grade 5, Baptist Sunday school teacher. While my kids were growing up, I taught. And two things. I really, coming across these kids today, which are now in their 30s and early 40s, they don't really retain very much of what I taught them. And then number two, I don't really want someone teaching that in the public school. I think it's better left to churches to teach it. And I do think it's helpful to have that education because I grew up in a small Lutheran church in San Antonio and was taught the Bible well. It did help me when I went to college, but no, I don't think it should be taught in the public schools because you do teach a point of view if you're a good Sunday school teacher.
All right. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for calling, and we appreciate that. So let's swivel back over to what we were talking about with the Ten Commandments. It's now posted in almost every public classroom, public school classroom in Texas, except in the ones that have taken part of a lawsuit here in San Antonio. So, the judge found, a federal judge found it was a violation of the Establishment Clause of the Constitution. But yet the state of Texas continues to allow the Bible, the Ten Commandments, to be posted. So, Andrew, explain that.
Yeah, we've got three different lawsuits going right now against various schools in Texas, school districts, which are, you know, kind of between a rock and a hard place with this law that has been imposed on them. And this is, it's deeply problematic, right? Because you have the state telling public schools that they have to display a religious text as edited and interpreted by the legislators in Texas, right? So it begins, I am the Lord your God, you shall have no other gods before me. I mean, that's what every kid in a public school is going to be faced with unless our lawsuits are successful. And our lawsuits have been successful to this point. As you mentioned, the judges have blocked it everywhere we've sued, and we've got a class action that we're hoping will kind of expand some of that ruling beyond just those particular school districts. So we are working on that. And, you know, I would just encourage anybody who's listening who wants to be a part of that lawsuit or who wants to help us stop the religious texts that are going to be infiltrating the public school classrooms to reach out to us at AU.org. If you've got another state church question or concern, reach out to us. We do a lot of work for folks in the state of Texas. We are committed to defending the separation of church and state and true religious freedom. And we're not going to stop ever. This is what we do. It is one of your earlier callers mentioned it, but I mean, defending the separation of church and state is kind of about as American as you can get.
But a lot of people have this knee-jerk reaction instinct, mm-hmm. like what's wrong with teaching kids parts of the Bible and teaching them the Ten Commandments? You know, these are good rules to live by.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think our Sunday school teacher just gave us a great answer to that. It's that you are going to be teaching it from a particular religious perspective that is going to leave out, exclude every other religious perspective and lift up that one narrow one. You know, we celebrated Religious Freedom Day a few weeks ago, back on January 16th. That celebrates the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, which was one of the first laws on religious freedom in this country, and it was kind of a precursor to our First Amendment. Thomas Jefferson wrote the bill, and James Madison shepherded it through the legislature. And there's a line in there that I've been thinking about a lot regarding Texas, because in it, Jefferson and Madison condemn, quote, the impious presumption of legislators and rulers, civil as well as ecclesiastical, who being themselves but fallible and uninspired men have assumed dominion over the faith of others, setting up their own opinions and modes of thinking as the only true and infallible. And that's what we have now. We have politicians who are bent on abusing power of offices that they temporarily occupy to impose their personal religious belief on other people's kids. That's not freedom. That's an abuse of power that tramples true religious freedom. And that's what we're fighting to stop at Americans United.
So under the First Amendment, what is the difference between teaching about religion and promoting religion?
I think it's a question of you kind of going back to that. You can teach about it, but not preach it as truth. You can educate about it, but not indoctrinate kids into it. And that requires kids to have a certain level of maturity to be able to do that. And that's why typically we have only seen Bible classes that have ever been taught in public schools as electives that are not Bible classes, but, you know, classes kind of that touch on world religions and are more comparative and don't just focus on one particular religion or religious text, let alone that one narrow interpretation of a religion or religious text. And even there, again, as those studies have shown, we have seen serious problems with the way that those are executed. It can become, you know, deeply problematic.
Right. And so when the state, like the state of Texas, through its public school system, when it teaches the King James Bible, this Christian view of the Ten Commandments and of these Bible passages, does that become to look like state endorsement of a religion?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, if you look for the Ten Commandments poster, if you compare the Ten Commandments poster in the classrooms up next to the Bible, you know, it's not a verbatim lifting of the text. The legislators edited it. They edited out things that they didn't like from the Ten Commandments. And you've also got things in there, like, for instance, you know, about adultery. And this is, you know, that's in a classroom with kindergartners and first graders. And this is, again, we're talking about parents and families who have the right to guide their children's religious upbringing, if any. Right? That is not the purview of the state. We don't want it to be the purview of the state. Conversations about faith belong between parents and their kids, but they belong between families. This should not be dictated or forced onto families by politicians and elected officials.
So we have this establishment clause. We've already mentioned that a few times. What is that?
So the Establishment Clause is the second part of the first clause of the First Amendment. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. But I just want people to realize that that's just one part of the separation of church and state, because the wall of separation between church and state is an American original. It's an American invention. The idea was floating around during the
Enlightenment. But this is an important thing. I just want to stick to this. The government is not supposed to establish an official religion, right?
I mean, that's part of it, David, but that's what I'm getting at. It's not just limited to the Establishment Clause. That
I know, but I wanted to stick to what this Establishment Clause is and what it does and why it's important. Just, you know, that's an important point. And I know there are other points. They may be more important, but this is
no, also... No, David, as a constitutional attorney, what I'm trying to explain to you is that the separation of church and state is broader than that narrow clause. That is a very important clause, but even before we have the First Amendment, which people need to remember, amended the Constitution, the separation of church and state was in that Constitution even before we get to that. This is the Establishment Clause is important for actually litigating these cases in court, but the separation of church and state is woven throughout the fabric of our Constitution, from those first few words, sure, "We the People," all the way through Article 6.
Got to take another break. We've got to take another break. The number is 833-877-8255. I've got Leo and Jennifer coming on the air when we come back from the break. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a new push from the state of Texas to require students in public schools to read passages of the Bible as part of their curriculum. They will be tested on this. So we do have, this is all coming from the Texas State Board of Education. And this is they are seats that are elected in Texas. There are 8 of them that are currently on the ballot right now that will be on the ballot in 2026. Six of them are Republican and 2 of them are Democrats. So this is an opportunity for voters to have their say about these things. They're elected on regionals. It's broken down into districts. The one in Bexar County is not up for election, and that is represented by a Democrat. But statewide, something for other voters to consider. Let's go to one of our callers. Let's go to Leo. And Leo, you're on the air. Hey, Leo.
Hello?
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Yeah. Okay. It's funny. Same politicians that want to put the Ten Commandments on the ballot, they can't live by the Ten Commandments. It's almost an embarrassment. From Austin all the way to Washington, you know, you can't say, "Oh, my God, look, I did this." You know, no, that's wrong. And you're teaching the children this? That's hypocrisy. That's all my comment. That's
right.
It.
Right. Leo, politicians don't follow the Ten Commandments. They follow the Ken Commandments from Ken Paxton. Your reaction to what that looks like, Andrew?
I mean, I think maybe that's why you're getting these same legislators editing out some parts of the Ten Commandments so they can put this up in public schools. I don't disagree. I'm not going to wade into the electoral politics, but I certainly don't disagree. That generally politicians in this country probably have a hard time following those.
All right, let's go to the caller. We have Jennifer. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am a praying Christian, and I am also an American. And as an American, this makes me hopping mad because I am just so tired of these Republicans trampling all over our United States Constitution. I mean, whether it's ignoring due process, or ignoring the separation of powers. You know, a separation of church and state is fundamental to our U.S. Constitution, and how dare anyone call themselves a patriot or even, you know, it is downright un-American, and we need to start calling it that when they start trampling all over the fundamental cores of our Constitution.
Jennifer, thank you for the call. So Andrew Seidel from the American United for Separations of Church and State, You said earlier that it's the separation of church and state is in the Constitution, but those words are not in the Constitution. There are people who are religious conservatives who argue that there is no separation of church and state. Explain that to me.
Sure. First of all, I mean, amen to Jennifer. I could not agree more. It's a kind of a silly argument. What they are saying is that the exact phrase separation of church and state is not in the Constitution. That's the argument that they're making. But, you know, neither is the phrase fair trial. We say fair trial to sum up a host of rights that are written into the Constitution in slightly more complicated language. But the separation of church and state as a principle absolutely is in the Constitution. It's written throughout it. You know, our Constitution was the first to declare that power comes from the people, not God. So those first three words, we the people, they're poetic, but they're a lot more. They're a declaration of power. Our Constitution was the first governing document not to mention a God or a deity. And it was godless by choice, not by accident. And in fact, there were people in the founding generation who objected to that choice, and those objections were overridden. You know, I mentioned the religious test ban in Article 6 of our Constitution. That's actually the only mention of religion in the original unamended document. And that ban on religious tests for public office includes some of the most clear and emphatic language in a document that's often deliberately vague. It says no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust. No, shall, ever, any, right? And then after all that, you get the First Amendment, which says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So that first part is the Establishment Clause. That second part is the Free Exercise Clause. And together, those clauses separate church and state and guarantee our religious freedom. And, you know, as Jennifer said, you know, I would be the first, as a constitutional attorney, I'd be the first to say there's a lot that's wrong with our Constitution. But those secular foundations are what make it unique. And they're genuine contributions, not just to political science and thought, but to all humanity. And they really are unique to the American experiment. And those contributions are threatened and undermined and under attack by Christian nationalism.
All right. Another caller, Barbara. And Barbara, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, yes, thanks for taking my call. You know, what I wanted to say at the base of it all, you know, every religion, unless it's diluted by all, by people's own egotistical leanings or, you know, their own way they want to manipulate people, God never, ever, ever forces. We have free will, and it's very sad for me to see that politicians are using something as wonderful as religion can be, a faith can be, and using it for their own selfish purposes and to manipulate people. I practice a specific faith. And I'm very actually devout in it. Yet I would never force that onto somebody else. And so, you know, I just, because then you don't have freedom anymore. And at the core of it, every religion is about freedom. It's not about forcing and conforming. You know, that's all the exterior stuff. And then what's behind that, what's the interior, as we can see many a time, you know, with mm-hmm. the politicians themselves, they spew all this stuff and how holy they are and this and that. Yeah. And then you look at their lives, it means nothing. But anyway, that's all I have. Thank you.
Well, Barbara, thank you for that. So, Andrew, yeah. Is there a way for parents to opt out? Is it really mandatory for all students, no matter what?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really great question. And Barbara's right that this is about force and coercion. And there was a Supreme Court case recently, David, that we call Mahmoud, which dealt directly with your question. And it was brought by a group of highly religious parents who said they don't want to be a part of this curriculum because it goes against their religion. And that is what is going to happen if Texas implement this. We're talking utter chaos because schools are going to have to navigate all of these different students that want to opt out of having this one narrow religious belief forced upon them. So you're going to, and it, again, because this is required in grades as young as kindergarten, first, third grade, right? You're going to have these teachers trying to manage, okay, today we're reading the story of Saul's conversion on the road to Damascus. So all of these different students, your family has opted you out, you have to go, and then they have to decide what they're going to do. And we're literally going to be dividing public school classrooms along religious lines. This is the last thing that we need at a time when our country is this divided. So it is going to create a lot of problems for the individual teachers in the classrooms, for those schools. I mean, probably we're talking chaos here in the classroom.
Let's go to Kitty on the phones. And Kitty, you're on the air.
Good morning. I was just doing some family history and learning about things that I didn't know about. In the 1600s, of course, the Pilgrims came to get religious freedom. But when they started their colony, you could only be a Puritan. You could only be one of those people. So there was a man named Roger Williams who got thrown out of the Massachusetts colony and went to live with the Wampanoag and Narragansett Indians in the 1630s because he believed in separation of church and state and that any religion should be free here in the Americas. He went back to England after living with the Narragansett Indians and believed that Indians should be compensated for the lands that the English were stealing from them. Can you believe it? In the 1630s, he founded and got a law. He got the right to create Providence and Rhode Island, the state of Rhode Island. So in the 1630s, Rhode Island was established as a place where freedom of religion was paramount. He was considered a radical, and separation of church and state was declared in the 1630s in Rhode Island. So that's how far back church and state separation goes in this country, in this continent anyway.
All right.
So just thought I'd put that in, that it's not even the Constitution. It's the 1630s, if you look up Rhode Island and the founding of Rhode Island and the laws that they enacted because of this man named Roger Williams. So,
all right. Well, Katie, thank you for that great history. That's appreciated. Really quickly, Andrew, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, there are some details I would tweak, but Roger Williams is a really fascinating character in American history and who really did do a lot. And I think the main point there, right, is that you cannot have true religious freedom unless you separate church and state. Church and state being distinct, being separate, that wall of separation is a prerequisite for real freedom, for true religious freedom.
And do you think that having the separation of church and state benefits the church?
Absolutely. I mean, and so did the founders. It's a wall that gives freedom to both churches and other houses of worship and religions and to believers themselves. In fact, you know, both James Madison and Adam Smith, you know, the first economists kind of, both predicted that if you separated church and state, you would see a flourishing of religious diversity, which is what we have in this country. You know, the reason that we have so many different religions and people, including our callers, are free to kind of form their own path forward when it comes to religion is because of that separation of church and state.
Right. Do you really want the government to decide what your religion is going to look like, how you pray, where you pray, when you can pray? That's what happens when we...
Books.
Yep. All right, we got to take another break here. Our phone lines are open. We do want to hear from listeners. We're hearing from some great ones. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after this. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line is Andrew Seidel. He is with the Americans United for Separation of Church and State. You can call in as we talk about the Texas proposal to require students read passages of the Bible from K to 12, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. I want to talk about parents' rights. Are parents giving up some of their rights if this happens?
I mean, absolutely. That's why we have so many parents in our Ten Commandments cases who are joining those lawsuits and suing. We just talked about, you know, the rights of people to be free to choose their religion, right, of houses of worship to do the same. We also have a number of clergy who are parts of those same Ten Commandments lawsuits, because when the state wades in and chooses a religion for other people's kids, of course, it's trampling parents' rights. It's trampling religious freedom. It's taking away the ability of the freedom of those people to choose their own way to worship and believe. To use a word that has been used several times by callers, that is fundamentally un-American. And this is one of the reasons that Americans United for Separation of Church and State is monitoring this situation. And if these standards are approved and this required reading does go into the classrooms, you know, our attorneys are standing by and we are ready to defend Texas families, Texas parents' religious freedom. Just like we're doing in those Texas Ten Commandments lawsuits. And again, if people believe that their public schools are introducing any coercive religion into their classrooms. They should contact us at AU.org. There's a report a violation tab at the top of the website right there, and our attorneys will step in and do what we can to help you, including if these standards are imposed on kids.
So the defenders, the proponents of this, they say that they aren't teaching religion. They're teaching classical cultural literacy, that every kid should know about David and Goliath. These are just parts of, you know, to know that is helps you understand when those references are made.
Yeah, I mean, the required religious literary works here are exclusively focused on the Christian and Hebrew Bibles. They ignore other important literary contributions and influences and other religious texts from other faiths, as we've discussed. They're overwhelmingly based on that conservative evangelical interpretation of the Bible, leaving out all of the other, many other translations from Protestants, Roman Catholics, you know, the Orthodox, and including Jewish. I mean, these are going to create that division in the classroom. And again, you know, they claim it's about literacy. That's one of their public justifications. But then you also have them clearly stating, as Brandon Hall did, that this is about bringing the word of God back into public schools in a meaningful way for the first time, right? So they're sometimes a little bit, I'll say, clever about their motivations, but they also are open about the fact that this is about imposing one narrow religious viewpoint on other people's kids.
Let's go to caller Juan. And Juan, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you doing? I'm happy that you took my call. I wanted to point out that this issue of religion, especially against minorities, has a long history. If you go back to the 1920s and the rise of the Klan pushed this ideology of Catholics. And it didn't matter, you know, whether you were white, brown, black, whatever, as long as you were Catholic. This anti-Catholic the conspiracy, this or the Catholic conspiracy, as it was called, the idea that Catholics would gain the ascendancy through voting, which was next to impossible by virtue of the numbers, and then bring the Pope over to basically rule over the country. This is the same thing that happened with Kennedy. There was touches of that conspiracy when John F. Kennedy ran. Here in Texas now, it's this push against Muslims because they're talking about Sharia law and all these Muslim courts. They don't exist. All this is just fear-mongering in order to be able to obtain a vote by those people that they create this fear in. It's the same thing with the immigrants. You know, there has to be a scapegoat in order for these people to push their ideology, which is a bunch of baloney. I mean, you know, you take a look at the Constitution, which is being argued. The Constitution gives you the right to believe whichever religion you want or not believe, if that's the case. I mean, it's completely unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it'll be kicked out because it just, you know, you can't force religion on people. Just right. Like during Prohibition, you can't force people not to drink.
Well, that's an interesting comparison. Juan, thank you very much for your call. So Juan is saying the courts will kick it out. The thing is, okay, how long has this the law been in place about the Ten Commandments in Texas public schools? It's already failed in federal courts here in San Antonio, but still the law is in place. It seems like that's part of the strategy. They know the courts take a long time and that this is something that they want to play out as long as possible and achieve a goal. So how do you, you know, figure that out?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think we should rely on the courts. You know, I think it is up to Texans to stand up and say no, to contact the State Board of Education and raise their voices up and say absolutely not. Like JFK, who Juan just invoked, I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute. You know, this would be, again, the first time any state in this country is mandating that all public school students are going to be reading religious texts. And Texas State Board of Education has not approved this yet, but they could as soon as tomorrow. So I would encourage public school families to speak out against this, teachers to speak out against this. Post about it on your social media. Share it with your friends and family. Tell them that this is coming and that this is un-American, that it violates the separation of church and state and the spirit of the law, whether or not courts get involved. Let's not rely on the courts. Let's rely on ourselves to stop this.
Do you have more details about what could happen tomorrow?
I do not right now. It's still sort of an open question mark for us and our team. But again, you know, this is a situation Americans United is monitoring very closely. And if it's approved, our attorneys are standing by to defend Texas families' religious freedom.
But according to the proposal, they're saying it could take multiple years before this is implemented. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't happen quickly. They're saying maybe the 2030-31 school year is when this would first appear in classrooms.
Yes. I mean, the timeline for this could certainly be longer than that. But again, always better to get it stopped before it starts, right? Don't let the snowball start rolling down the hill.
They've already approved the what they call the Blue Bonnet curriculum, mm-hmm. and this was a Bible-infused curriculum that school districts had to opt into. And if they did, the school districts received additional money from the state, so there seemed to be a strategy there, starve the school districts of money and then offer them more money if they take this curriculum. And then recently, they've had to make over 4,000 corrections to the curriculum. How much faith do you have in their faith-driven curriculum?
Well, we know that curriculum was deeply, deeply problematic. It injected Bible stories into elementary school reading. There was all kinds of really both awful from the same standpoint that we've been talking about, that we're talking about imposing religion on kids, but also just scholastically, these were not well done standards.
Does this hurt education?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and again, instead of having children, you know, learn about, for instance, again, I'll lift it up, the separation of church and state, you know, they're learning about this one narrow interpretation of the Bible that kind of, you know, is problematic in other ways.
Right. So will they just put on a test, you know, why does a steam engine work? You just put, you know, because the Bible says so. Let's go to Yvette on the phones.
Separation.
Yvette, you're on the air.
Hi. I was calling in to say, I understand that my state, Texas, is what it is. And I've come to kind of accept that, even though I fight it within the voting rights. But with that being said, if we have to teach these Christians like David and Goliath, why is it next time we can't teach about a Hindu story that they have, or the next time teach like a religious story, like a Jewish story, a Muslim story? Why is it like, are the teachers allowed to at least do other religions too? Or are they just forcing this one? Cause it's like, okay, if you're going to give us one, you should give us all.
All right, Yvette, thank you for that question. And so this is the curriculum, and the curriculum is set. So Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, that is not an option, right? As you just stated, David, it's the curriculum. And this is what is going to be imposed on students, right? And there's very little in this mandatory reading list that's proposed, very little racial, gender diversity. We're talking mostly old texts that were written by white men. That's mostly what we are looking at here. We are looking at that narrow interpretation of conservative, often evangelical Christianity to the exclusion of all other religions, including other interpretations of Christianity. So that is exactly what they are kind of taking away with this mandatory reading, is the ability of teachers to even present that more diverse view.
We will stay on top of the story. We'll see what happens at the State Board of Education meeting tomorrow and bring our listeners the updated information on that. And Andrew, if something happens, I'll be calling you for you're trying to get some information.
David, I'm happy to come back on anytime. I had a blast.
All right. Well, Andrew Seidel, he is with the Americans United for Separation of Church and State, Vice President of Strategic Communications. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.